Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Kathleen O., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Monday, November 18th, 2019, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today, we are reading from the Big Book, and we're on page 68, the fourth paragraph, which begins with Now About Sex. We'll be reading and commenting on that one paragraph only. Today's readers are Shelley E., who'll be reading the 12 steps, Athena B. will be reading the 12 traditions, and the readers of our text are KP, Becca R., and Sandy W. The share ID for Sunday, November 17th special edition, is 13,675. That's 13675. And for this morning's November 18th, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, is 13,678. Our newcomer greeter for today is Mo H., and Reggio will be making the announcements. The OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose. OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I'll now ask Shelley E. to read the 12 steps, please.
Thanks, Kathleen. Good morning. Thanks for your service. I'm Shelley E., a gratefully recovered one day at a time compulsive overeater in Texas. And here are the steps we took. One, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive eaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for allowing me to do service, and I pass.
Thank you, Shelley E. Okay, Athena B., would you read the 12 traditions, please?
Yes, I will. This is Athena B. from Northern California, and these are our traditions. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. Four, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. Five, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. Six, an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. Seven, Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thanks for letting me do service, and I pass.
Thank you, Athena B.
You're welcome.
How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year, and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker's should be muted. And today, we resume our study of the Big Book. We're on page 68, the fourth paragraph, which begins with now about sex, and we'll be reading and commenting on that one paragraph only. So KP, if you could get us started, please. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is KP. I'm from Malden, South Carolina. Now about sex. Many of us needed an overhauling there, but above all, we tried to be sensible on this question. It's so easy to get way off the track. Here we find human opinions running to extremes, absurd extremes, perhaps. One set of voices cry that sex is a lust of our lower nature, a base necessity of procreation. Then we have the voices who cry for sex and more sex, who bewail the institution of marriage, who think that most of the troubles of the race are traceable to sex causes. They think we do not have enough of it, or that it isn't the right kind. They see its significance everywhere. One school would allow man no flavor for his fare, and the other would have us all on straight pepper diet. We want to stay out of this controversy. We do not want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. What can we do about them? Thank you for letting me read this morning, letting me be of service, and I will pass.
Kay, do you not want to comment on that paragraph?
No, I'm going to pass this morning.
Oh, you're going to pass. Okay. Sandy, do you want to comment on that paragraph? And then I'll open it up for sharing.
Sure, Kathleen, I'd be happy to. Well, thanks. I shouldn't say it quite that enthusiastically. this is Sandy W., gratefully recovered in Connecticut. So grateful for this past weekend because, you know, when I've read that paragraph in the past, I've always thought, you know, okay, I'm almost 60 years old. I've been married for over half of those years. What could I possibly have to say on this? But isn't it certainly obvious that God has a sense of humor that I get to? But I think what's coming to me here is just thinking back when I did my four-step inventory and looked back to my dating days and how inventorying those relationships where I had certainly not acted in ways I was proud of and certainly caused numerous harms. But it's also been maybe even more important for me to look at my relationship with this man of over 30 years to see the ways in which I treat him that are certainly not ideal as the four-step sex conduct inventory guides us to get to. In that sex ideal, you know, that's been so helpful to me in my marriage that I could determine what my ideal is and then be determined to try to live up to it to the best of my ability. It's been so helpful, like I said, in my marriage and in other non-sexual relationships to formulate these ideals. Something I'd never thought of before, like who does God want me to be as a wife, as a mother, as a future mother-in-law and daughter-in-law. You know, that the sex inventory process has really extended for me into kind of an ongoing relationship inventory process. And with the help of others, it's guided me away from my old ways of thinking about getting just what I want or I think that I need to begin to consider the other person's needs and wants. It was posed to me to consider the experience I was giving other people in my words and actions, primarily my husband. And I realized, you know, in over 30 years of marriage, I'd rarely, if ever, considered my husband's experience in our interactions. You know, it's something I'm certainly not proud of, and I'm just at the beginning of making a point of putting my ideal in our relationship first. That and the other concept of doing things for him just out of love. You know, there was a period when I was working through a regular resentment each morning when I'd come downstairs and find dirty dishes in the sink. And someone suggested, well, could you put those in the dishwasher for him just out of love? And I thought, at first I was like, well, no way am I gonna do that. If he loved me, he would put them in the dishwasher. But I realized, you know, that's selfish and self-seeking, and it takes me all of 2 seconds to do it. And I prayed a lot of the resentment and the sick man's prayer to get to that point. But it's helped me so much through working through my four-step inventory, doing that overhauling, as this paragraph talks about, to get to the point where I can do things for other people just out of love for them rather than expecting or wanting something in return or getting my way. And that's what I have on that paragraph today. So thanks for letting me share. Thanks for your service, Kathleen. I'll pass.
Thank you, Sandy W. Okay, we're going to open this up for sharing. We're on page 68, the fourth paragraph, now about sex. Who would like to share on that paragraph?
All I heard
was Bruce E. Lisa.
Hold on.
Lisa, what's the first initial of your last name?
G, as in go.
G. And Mary, how about your initials?
Mary Jane Z.
Mary Jane Z. Okay. And then who else?
Dana K.
I think I heard Dana. Was it Dana?
Yes. K.
K. K. Okay.
Cindy
and, B. Evan B.
Heather R.
Evan B. Was it Evan
yeah.
B?
Yeah.
Okay. One more.
Ginger C.
Was it Ginger C I heard?
Yes.
Okay. I'm so excited. You're so jumping at the bit to talk about this. This is great, you guys. Okay. I have, and if everyone could star one to mute your phone right now, and then we'll have Brucey unmute. So I'm still hearing a lot of scratching in the background. So could everyone star one to mute? So I have Bruce E, Lisa G, Mary Jane Z, Dana K, Evan B, and Ginger C. So, okay, Bruce E.
All right. It is Bruce E. I'm
recovering food addict. I'm in New Jersey. And how could I miss commenting on that one? And hey, we got a couple more pages of this too, right? I know we got another page or something like that in this, on this subject. Well, first of all, I got to remind myself, we don't want to be an arbitrator of anyone's sex contact. We all conduct. We all have sex problems. Well, I've sure had them over the years. I'm 77. I got the mind of a teenager, and I got the body of a 70, 80-year-old man. So that kind of tells you where I'm at. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. Well, it's a thing about life, you know, is that I got to live life. And another thing about life is I got to be human in it. While I live it, I'm human. So I'm going to have sex problems. And I've always had sex problems. Always have had. And what's been my problem? Well, the two extremes. I've always gone, in everything I've ever done, I've always gone to one extreme or the other. I've always been extreme in my thinking. You know, total withdrawal, total abstinence, be anorexic about sex, or go to the other extreme and think that, you know, everybody ought to be having it, you know. So, but then it goes down here and it says, hey, I better not give any advice to anybody. I mean, it's just like everything else. We just don't give advice. I just don't give advice. And I'm learning that more and more in this program, that if somebody comes to me and they've got a problem and I think I can help them, then I can ask them, can I give you some feedback on that? If they say, no. I mean, one time I said to my wife, can I give you some feedback on that? It wasn't about sex, it was about something else. And can I give you some feedback on that? And she says, nope. Okay. End of conversation. She shut me down. So I was dying to give her feedback, but I couldn't. So I have to be sensitive about it. I can't be the arbitrator of anyone's sex conduct. I sure can't. Man, I mean, I got to get through my own problems in life, let alone somebody else's. And I like this paragraph. We need an overhaul. Many of us needed an overhauling there. Yep, me too. Me too. Another one that does. And, man, I'm just really, really super that in this book, Bill tries to cover every aspect of the human life. And he does. And then we get to talk about it. So thanks for letting me share, and I pass.
Thank you, Brucey. Okay, Lisa G. followed. Mary Jane Z. will follow you. Go ahead, Lisa G.
Good morning. It's Lisa G. from Texas, recovered. And, you know, when I first read this part, it made me really uncomfortable because I just thought it was about sex, like the act of sex. But my step sponsor told me something different. And, you know, sex is just about the most intimate thing that two people can do. First of all, you have to get naked, theoretically. I mean, I guess some people don't get all naked, but then there you are, all of you in your birthday suit. And when I was really fat, I didn't want my husband to see my body because I was mortified. And I pushed him away for years, pushed him away. And I didn't think one thing about what he was feeling or thinking, that I was rejecting him, that he felt rejected. All I could think about was my selfishness, that I didn't want him to see me like he didn't see me, you know. And, you know, I've made an amend to him about that because that was, I'm sure, very painful for him. I mean, theoretically, when you get married and you're only supposed to have sex with one person, and I wasn't allowing him to do that because I was so ashamed of my body. Totally selfish. And, you know, this it is about intimacy because you're allowing that person to see you totally for who you are. And intimacy has been scary to me. And not just sexually, you know, just any intimacy, to let somebody see me for really who I am, because honestly, there's been a whole lot of my life where I didn't know who I really was. I still don't really know. It sort of gets revealed a little bit at a time through the 12 steps. And you know, it can be a really nasty way to punish somebody, to not allow intimacy into a relationship, because I know even just with my girlfriends that I love, if they, like I have one girlfriend that won't talk to me right now because we have political differences, that hurts so much because she's withdrawn her intimacy from me. So anyways, that's really all I have, and I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa G. Okay, Mary Jane Z., it is your turn, followed by Dana K.
Good morning. Mary Jane Z. here, recovered in Kentucky. Thank you for your service. Now about sex. Well, here's what I learned about sex growing up. Nothing. Nobody talked to me about anything. So, you know, I'm sure I'm not alone in that. It's not something our parents were really schooled in either. So, you know, I got everything I learned from the media, and I grew up in a time of if it feels good, do it. But the messages I got from my parochial school was, if it feels good, there's something wrong with you. Better not do it. So that, and I just think of this paragraph as, I mean, well, this whole book, but this paragraph, wouldn't it have been nice if I could have read this to my kids, or it would have been read to me, because it does seem like a scary mystery, this whole sex thing. And how are we supposed to show up? And how gentle this book is in terms of, it's wading us into the human drama here. First we look at resentments, then we look at fear, and then we look at the basis of a lot of those resentments and fears and how we're showing up in relationships, as the previous speaker said. We're naked. And, you know, this is just, they left us with a cliffhanger here in terms of, We're gonna get more of this. We what can we do about them? Well, I'm gonna learn about that in the next over the next week. But just that it's to me this part is we're really entering into the divine here. The divine is guiding us, is showing us. See, look. There's no judgment here. All you've got to do is if you think you need to show up this way, okay. If you need to show up this way, okay. But we're going to ask you some questions later on. And maybe just maybe, you'll get so far off the left side or the right side, and you'll get into balance about how you're showing up in relationships. And you'll get closer and closer to me, and I'll guide you in how you're supposed to show up. And so, you know, every time I do inventories, I'm learning more, and I'm learning, oh, if it feels good, maybe it's okay to proceed, because I'm getting that conscious contact, and I'm learning how I'm supposed to show up. So thanks. With that, I pass.
Thank you, Mary Jane Z. Okay, Dana K., you're up next, followed by Evan B.
Hi, good morning, visionaries. This is Dana K., recovered in Missouri. Thank you all for being here today. So we're on step four, made of searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Now about sex. And if I was a little bit more of a joking kind of person, I would tell a little joke to kind of make this a little softer, easier to share. But I'm just going to delve right in here. I remember in the book that it talks about when I'm going to make my moral inventory of myself, not anyone else, that I said that I would be honest and thorough from the very start, and that this is a fact-finding and fact-facing mission. And I love how the authors are just, you know, they don't shy away from any topic or anything that we need for complete full recovery in our you know, in our relationship with our higher power and in the issue that we have with food. I'm sorry, I've got some commotion here in the background. There we go. So anyway, going into this, I thought that my sex problems were all the problem of my husband or
that I didn't even have any sex problems. You know, what do we have a problem with? And it was just really helpful in the big book to see that they say, you know, we all have problems. You know, we'd hardly be human if we didn't. And what can we do about them? And as we'll find out in the coming days, you know, we get to shape our own sex ideal and clean up the past. And as I worked through this, I just found it really freeing, just like the resentment inventory and the fear inventory. You know, the sex ideal is, it's a God-given instinct, and there were issues that I needed to work out in this. And my sponsor approached it with sensitivity, her own story, and a joke, which made it really helpful to delve into this topic. And I thank you all for being here and listening, and with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Dana Kay. I'm going to call you later. I want to hear that joke. Okay. Evan B., you're up next, followed by Ginger C.
Hi there.
Are you there, Evan?
This is Evan.
Oh, there you are.
Yeah. Hi, there's Evan B., compulsive overeater from Los Angeles, California. You know, when I was first doing my first four-step inventory, I kind of looked at it, and I never really had any issues in terms of, like, things I was, like, ashamed of that I was carrying around, like any aggressive sexual activity or anything like that. But the more I looked at it, the more I realized, I guess, where I was causing harm is where I was holding back intimacy in times when I was choosing compulsive overeating instead of closeness. And I've had a lot of girlfriends, and I have one right now, that my compulsive overeating absolutely gets in the way of our intimacy. And the girlfriend I'm dating right now, wonderful, beautiful person, and she's so giving, so amazingly unselfish, and I wish I could match her. And her language of love is for sure touch, you know, and she needs a lot of it, you know, for one reason or another. I'm not sure why, but she really, that's really what she needs. And, you know, when the food obsession strikes, you know, on the weekend sometimes for me or whenever it strikes, and I'm still shaky in my recovery sometimes, you know, I choose food, and then all of a sudden I just feel bloated, I feel gross, and I just don't want to be intimate. And that is a harm. And somebody that needs love and closeness and touch from me and wants it from me and only me, I'm choosing, you know, oily crap foods instead of closeness to somebody. Like, you know, on the last day of my life and my deathbed, am I really going to be like, oh, I wish I had more chips and salsa? No, nobody, it doesn't matter. Relationships are everything. And so I really have to take a look at that and ask God for help and ask my higher power for help, because that's something that's really causing harm. And I have to really take a look at that, because my relationships are everything. And when the food obsession takes over, it lies to you. And everything else, like all your relationships, aren't important anymore. And the only thing that's important is the food. So I pray today to my higher power to help me and guide me away from the obsession, so I can be more intimate and close with my partner and be more willing to touch. Because I'm not so full of crap and overeating and bloated and not feeling well. And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Evan B. Okay, before we take you, Ginger C., just a reminder to everyone that we're on page 68, the fourth paragraph. We're sharing on that one paragraph that begins with "Now about sex." And after Ginger C., I'll be taking some more names. So go ahead, please, Ginger.
Hi, Kathleen. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. And thank you for your service. This is Ginger C., recovered compulsive overeater in Colorado. So we want to stay out of this controversy, and we don't want to be the arbiter of anyone's sex conduct. We all have sex problems, you know, and to think that I don't, then I'm in just denial. I think the three most primal and painful addictions are sex, food, and money. And why are these so painful? Because you began with them. You were born with all three. Alcohol and drugs we tend to pick up in our teens. But I love these clear-cut directions, and especially as a guide. You want this person to recover and to tap into a power, because if they don't have God, some higher power, whatever the universe brings to them that's greater than them, they're screwed. They will absolutely be eating food again. And so with this information that happens in this sex inventory, you may hear things and it may throw a curveball. But I'm not the arbiter. I'm not the judge. And a judge has ultimate authority in the matter who settles a dispute. Well, that one is God. And this situation lies between them and their higher power. And again, what's so beautiful is we get to listen these untold stories. There's four impediments that are blocking our power. And one of them is a secret I will not tell. And guess what? Guess why I'm not going to tell? First of all, I'm in so much shame about what I did possibly. But how are you going to receive it? How are you going to hold this truth that I'm about to bring to you? Are you going to judge me? Are you going to criticize me and condemn me? Are you going to make me feel worse than the shame I'm already feeling? Because sadly, that's what happens. Sometimes I share my shame and you shame me back. And it's not like because we're bad people. It's just because we can't hold it, because we can't hold our own pain, our own shame. So my most important job is just to keep my eyes on my own paper and trust that God is working perfectly in and through all of us. And to stay out of judgment. God is the judge. It's between them and their higher power. It always has been. It will always be in the last analysis. And my job as a guide is just to, again, hopefully connect them to that power that they are so dependent upon. So I have two businesses every day of my life, every day I wake up. I have my business, and I have none of my business. And with that, I pass.
Thank you, Ginger C. Okay, I'm going to open it up for sharing. Who else would like to share on page 68, the fourth paragraph?
Lynn P.
Jill F.
David M. David M.
Okay.
Cindy.
Okay, hold on. I got David M. I got Cindy. Cindy, what's your initial?
D.
D. I got Mo H. And there was someone between Mo and David.
Jill F.
Yep.
Joe.
Lynn P.
What was? Okay, hold on. What was it? Joe something?
No, Jill F.
Oh, Jill S. Okay, Jill S. I'll take. And I got Lynn P. And one more.
Robert T.
Somebody with an R?
Robin T.
Robin T. Okay. I'm so happy you guys are all stepping up to the plate here. Okay. So I have Mo H, Jill F, David M, Cindy D, Len P, and Robin T. So go ahead, Mo H.
I'm here. I thought I was coming later. Hi. Good
okay.
morning. Mo H. I'm still asleep. In Northern California, recovered compulsive overeater. Oh, my God. I was just thinking about, I wish I had been given a copy of this big book on my wedding day, because it sure would have helped me. I can relate to some of the shares where what I was taught about sex was that silence. So didn't learn about it until I was in my monogamous marriage. And so... So here it says, we all have sex problems. I thought I was the only one who had a sex problem, and it was all me. It was all my fault. We'd hardly be human if we didn't, but what can we do about them? I just like that. So this paragraph right here is helping us, the rubber meets the road right here. This was the part I didn't want to do in the fourth step. I didn't want to share anything with anybody. But I have learned over the years, and I don't know if this is true, and I tell my sponsees that it's not about sexual, I mean, it is about sexual intercourse, but it's also about intimate relationships. Having a relationship, I forgot to set my timer, I hope you get me, Kathleen. Intimate relationships. So my relationships with... you know, cousins or best friends or nieces and nephews and that. Anyway, I have harmed them, but most of all, my husband. And, you know, having this big book and the power of God and me being able to make amends for my behavior, my main behavior was withholding. And it wasn't fair to him. I've heard that on the line. It wasn't fair. And it was all about me, and it was all about, and what I did to loosen up, drink. That's what helped me. Then I drink, and then after, I would eat. So I had the two going on, even though I'm not an alcoholic. I didn't get into that, but drinking would help relax me, right? No, what can relax me is me connecting with my higher power and asking for guidance and asking for strength and asking for support in this endeavor. And this is one of our basic instincts to procreate or to enjoy one another. And in my faith growing up, it wasn't about enjoyment. It was about procreating. And so I think that's all I have to say. With that, I'll pass. Have a great day, everyone.
Thank you, Mo H. And you had 10 seconds to spare, so that was very good timing. Okay, Jill S., you're up next, followed by David N.
Hi, thanks, Kathleen. This is Jill S. from San Diego. I think if I ever wondered if I have had recovery, it's my willingness to talk on this right now. I'm kind of surprising myself. This really was a turning point for me in my recovery, because looking at sex both as an act as well as a sex ideal really required me to ask some really tough questions related to when did my disease begin. And first and foremost, I remember when I was 8 years old and had these urges and didn't understand them, and when I was 11 and sitting on a boy's lap thinking, oh my God, am I too fat? And so those early recollections really brought about the reminder of how much shame I've carried in my disease. I don't want you to see me. I don't want you to touch me. Enjoyment, well, that's not supposed to happen, because what does that even mean? How do I do it? How do I not do it? There was so much about me in this and the selfishness of me, and I hurt so many people in my lifetime. And it really wasn't until I went through the steps, and I've been absent for 11 years, and it wasn't until I went through the steps the fourth time that I really got down to those truths. The truth that I did to people, the harm that I created both to others and to myself, those dirty secrets, those dark secrets that I was so afraid to tell, that I really finally understood that I had to be rid of my truths by being rigorously honest. But I also had to look at sex as something that was more than a physical act, that it was really all about intimacy. And yeah, today it still confuses me sometimes. This whole concept of a sex ideal, it took a sponsor to work with me that really did guide me, never judge me, that taught me what does it mean to show up in life to others, regardless of whether there's a sexual relationship involved. And so for me, this whole aspect of sex has really opened me up as a human being, one that sometimes is awkward around it, but I'm awkward in life sometimes. And if I keep showing up and saying, God, what do I do? How do I do this next? It really has opened doors that I never, ever imagined were possible. And so I think if there's any newcomer on the line, I just encourage you to tell the truth, dig deep, understand your sponsor is there to support you, not to judge you, and then turn it over to God. Because for me, understanding that I have to stay willing to learn, stay willing to act around this, is one of the greatest freedoms I've ever enjoyed. So thank you for letting me share on something I never in my life thought I would share on. Have a great day.
Thank you, Jill S. Okay, David M., you're up next, followed by Cindy D.
Can I be heard?
Yes, you can.
Hello? Oh, good.
Yes.
My name's David M., Los Angeles. This is my first time sharing on the phone. Thank you, Charles B., for inspiring me, and I committed to contrary action to share today. It could have been a different paragraph, you know, this is not the one I would have picked, but God's will, but here we go. Many years ago, I was at a meeting, and it was an AA meeting, and they give cakes, and my friend Mitch said, I said, look at the look at that. And he said, oh, yeah, she's a beautiful girl. And I said, no, the cake. Everybody laughed, right? Because a man's got his priorities. What I've learned about this paragraph is what my friend Jerry told me. He says that we die of shame. We keep secrets. And this whole paragraph is all about letting go of the shame, letting go of the secrets. There's a movie called The Edge, And Anthony Hopkins says in the line, when they're lost in the woods, says, why do people die in the woods? They die of shame because they're alone. They're by themselves. And it's no different than Bob on that day when he talked to Bill, that he wasn't alone, that he found a guy that drank just like him. So in the inventory process, we expose this darkness, this shame. The therapist I see now, who used to be, was basically originally an acquaintance, he told me 20 years ago when I felt like a fraud and I had this big belly, and he pointed to my belly. He said, this, the belly, means stay away from me. And that's ultimately what food did. Food essentially was my comfort. It was my lost in the woods. It was me pushing myself away from all of you because I was ashamed, afraid, who would want me, not worthy of love. So therefore, problems in the sex arena. And when I got to program, I was able to uncover, discover, and discard. And, on the sponsor level, when I sponsor guys, the old line is, don't get in a relationship in the first year. Well, who might be the arbiter of anybody's sex conduct? It says it in the instructions right here. Ultimately, I think really expanding is, don't make any major changes until I make a major change in myself. So if I'm in a relationship, don't get out of it, because you don't know what's going to be on the other side after trusting God, cleaning house, and helping others and recovering, being recovered. If you're not in a relationship, don't get in a relationship. If you have a job, don't quit it. The only exception, the old timer told me, is if you don't have a job, go get a job. We're not surprised when an alcoholic gets sober. We're surprised when he gets a job. So
time
love you guys. It was a great weekend. Thank you. Have a great weekend, and I'll pass. Great week.
Thank you, David M. Thanks for doing your first share this morning. Okay, Cindy D., you're up next, followed by Len P.
Thank you, Kathleen. Good morning, everybody. This is Cindy D., gratefully recovered in Texas. And, much not to repeat, but much like what's been said before, when I did my four-step inventory, when we got to sex conduct, that was when I was my most scared. I had eased a bit because I'd gone through the resentments and the fears with my sponsor, and it had been a truly cleansing experience, and there was no judgment, and it was just truly sharing, and it felt like a million pounds coming off of my shoulders to let go of all the secrets that I had been holding. And with sex, that was definitely true too, and there was so much shame. And when I look back now, I think the most powerful part of my fourth step was the sex conduct, because I did have just such a relief from the shame and the guilt that I'd been carrying around. And I look back and, like so many other aspects of my life, my sex conduct was extreme. It was either total abstinence and no sex, or promiscuity. And it was believing sex was love, and that was the only way that I could experience love. Sex really has, now for me, a little to do with love, that love is more about true intimacy and sharing and just really being real and connected to someone else. And it doesn't have to be a love relationship. It can be a friendship. And, I too was at the convention this weekend, and that's so much of what I experienced, is true relationships with people where we're truly connected, we're honest, and it's one of the things I'm most grateful for is the truth that we speak in 12 step. And I just have a grateful heart today, having come home, and I'm reflecting on this past weekend and reflecting on my 17 months in program, and I can see growth in myself. And so it was, for me, a very affirming experience that, for me, the weight was a barrier to other people. And with the physical recovery I've had, I now look forward to meeting new people and growing new relationships in my life. And I welcome outreach from people, and I'm not afraid to put myself out there and to share and be part of and to just be part of and not have to be, the star or the leader that has been so much a character defect of mine in the past. So I'm grateful that you're all here. I'm grateful for those that have brought us together and organized our meetings and the convention, and I'm grateful for my higher power that he showed me the light was here. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Cindy D. Okay, Len P., you're up next, followed by Robin T.
This is Len P. from sunny California, Southern California, and I'm very grateful to be online this morning. And the sex inventory, I'll tell you, it is one of the most crucial things, I think, that's tied to my food addiction. You know, I'm an addict, and that means every addiction you could think of, including sex, was something that I succumbed to. And what I found, what was interesting about my food addiction was that, you know, the more I ate, the more self-hatred I had, and the more self-hatred toward my body and my body image. And I lost two marriages over that. I mean, when you're 425 pounds, it's hard to, well, one, to have sex, that's just from the mechanical standpoint, but from two, to actually have a healthy self-image. And our whole culture is just tied to this physique and this ideal. You know, I live in LA, which, you know, Orange County, which is essentially LA, which is essentially Hollywood, and basically this ridiculous ideal of what a man should look like, which is impossible to achieve for especially me, but for the majority, the vast majority of people. And to have this feeling of self-hatred, because boy, when I get on an obsessive thought, I could take it to the nth degree and I catastrophize. That's part of my diseased mind. And, you know, to have this distortion about myself and my body image, which is so tied into my sexual activity and my intimacy. And, you know, the problem is, you know, and our fourth step is that we're asleep to ourselves, and we see things through a distorted and demented lens, and see myself through a diseased, you know, feeling and a dysfunctional behavior. And what this step is supposed to do is get me out of that selfishness and self-centeredness to address those resentments, fears, and sex. And with it, you know, to uncover the dishonesty and the secrets that I've kept, and especially the guilt and shame that is associated with my diseased mind, right? And it's kind of born out of, you know, the seven deadly sins, you know, pride, envy, anger, greed, sloth, gluttony, and lust. Lust being, you know, first and foremost in my sexual inventory. And so these are things that I consider all the time when I'm doing this step with my sponsees, and especially with my sponsor. We uncovered some, you know, ugly truths about my behavior and where I was dishonest and selfish. And like I said, thank you so much for letting me share this morning.
Thank you, Len P. Thank you, Len. Okay, Robin T., can you do maybe 2.5 minutes?
Sure. Do you want to time me just in case?
Sure. Thanks. Thanks, Robin.
Thank you. This is Robin P. I'm normally in Vero Beach, Florida. I'm still in New Jersey and at my sister's. Thank you so much. I'm Robin P. I'm a very grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. And thank you so much for this amazing program and wonderful weekend. And just God bless everybody in your recoveries and with just in your abstinence. It was such a blessing. Oh, my goodness. I'm carrying you all in my heart. It's such a gift to meet you all in person. Regarding this paragraph and the sex inventory, you know, I've done several inventories, and it gets easier every time, thank God. And I grew up in a lot of child abuse, some of which was sexual abuse. And so I had a lot of inventory to work through and a lot of healing to do and to reclaim my body and to de-shame. Just, you know, a lot of times people carry that around. And so it was a really I thought, why do they include that in the fourth and fifth? Why do they have sex in there? And then it turns out it's very important and very healing to work that through. And even when I've taken other people through when they've had abuse, it's very important part of the de-shaming and reclaiming our bodies. And, you know, I'm happily married today and very grateful for my relationship with my husband. And that part is part of our relationship that is really important for us and has come a long way. And it's been, I've gotten to work my recovery on my physical relationship with my husband, you know, and just, it feels like it's, you know, it's just, it's important for the intimacy. And I'm really grateful. And God bless all of you. Thank you so much. I pray that you have a very abstinent, blessed day. And with that, I pass.
Thank you so much, Robin P. And that was perfect timing. Okay, so amazing shares, everybody. I know I say that, but just amazing. So thank you, everyone who shared today. And thank you, Team Monday. Special thanks to you for doing service this morning. Shelly E., Athena B., KP, Becca R., Sandy W., Mo H., and Reggie O. And we are now going to close with a reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. So, Becca R., would you please read a vision for you?
Hey, guys. It's Becca R., recovered compulsive overeater here in Kentucky. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose to you and to us, more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.